Once upon a time, in an age of forests and firelights, our ancestors were wise to the spectrum of human identity. Among the fairy tales and myths they told were stories of glass coffins and marble statues, eunuchs and androgynes, chaste marriages and bodily transformations, symbolic stories that hint at other identities, tales of asexuality. This is the Asexual Fairy Tales Podcast, and I'm your storyteller, Elizabeth Hopkinson. Each month, I'll be reading you another story from my books of asexual fairy tales. Some of these are old tales of myth and legend, in which I first found representation for my asexual identity. Others are original stories by me, based on traditional motifs. It's a personal selection, but I hope you find something in it that speaks to you too. So, sit back, if you are able, relax, and enjoy another asexual fairy tale. Hello, and welcome to the Asexual Fairy Tales podcast for February 2024. And seeing how this is the month of St. Valentine's Day, I will be reading you the story of Cupid and Psyche. It first appeared in a book known as The Golden Ass by the 2nd century AD Roman author Lucius Apuleius. Apologies for the pronunciation. Many scholars consider it to be the forerunner of Beauty and the Beast, my favourite fairy tale. There are many similar stories around the world of a girl sacrificed to a so-called monster who turns out to be anything but monstrous. And despite the fact that Cupid is also known as Eros, I have always thought of it as an asexual myth. It shows us the possibility of a relationship not cemented by animal desire, but by something delicate and beautiful. In a book called The Language of Love, 2004, Megan Tressider calls Cupid and Psyche a unisexual couple, a perfect archetype of lovers suspended in a kind of ethereal bliss. To my mind, this makes them like that other perfectly suspended pair, the young lovers in John Keats's poem Ode to a Grecian Urn, 1819, which I highly recommend reading. And it is with that urn that our story begins. Imagine, if you can, a Grecian urn, a clay vase the colours of lamplight and darkness. Imagine you turn it in your hands and see, among the scenes of gods and mortals, two young lovers, androgynous, almost mirror images of one another. They are on the verge of kissing, yet they will never kiss, for they cannot move. They will forever be suspended in a moment of anticipation, untainted by knowledge and betrayal. Happy lovers, who can they be? Let us imagine the urn can speak and tell their tale. There was a certain king and queen who had three daughters. The elder two were beautiful and charming in the ordinary way, and soon gained princes for husbands. The youngest, however, whose name was Psyche, was so beautiful that the local people worshipped her as a goddess. They abandoned their worship of Venus, goddess of love, and bringer of fertility, and gave their devotion to Psyche, a virgin and a mortal. As a result, no prince would offer his hand to Psyche. No man could imagine the warmth of the marriage bed with Psyche. She was as a marble statue in a temple. The king and queen were covered with shame. No husband for their daughter. No grandchildren. "It is a disgrace to have a barren line in our family," they said. Worse still, the land itself grew barren. Crops failed. People began to starve. Disease broke out. Soon the common folk were cursing Psyche. "We thought she was our goddess," they said, "but look what has happened. What has she ever done for us? She is cursed." "No, I am neither a goddess nor a curse," said Psyche. "I am merely myself." But no one listened to her. The king and queen decided to consult the oracle of Apollo. Your daughter is an offence to Venus, the oracle said. This barrenness shows the goddess's displeasure. To appease her, you must make a sacrifice. You must offer her as a bride to the one who dwells on the mountain. At this, Psyche's parents shuddered with horror. The mountain was the dwelling place of a monster that neither gods nor men could resist. To make a girl his bride was to offer her to be devoured. When they found the courage to tell Psyche, she shrugged, resigned. My life is miserable enough, she said. Even to my own family, I am a stranger. Lead me to the mountain. They dressed Psyche as a bride and led her in procession to the mountain, although it was more like a funeral procession than a bridal party. When they reached the summit, they left Psyche alone and returned home with tears in their eyes. Soon the land returned to normal, and the memory of Psyche faded from their minds. Only her sisters remembered and wondered what had become of her. Meanwhile, on the mountain, Psyche was left panting with fear. She closed her eyes and waited for the monster to come and devour her. Instead, a gentle breeze began to blow. It blew her to the other side of the mountain, where it lulled her to sleep. When she awoke, she found herself in a grove of stately trees, in the midst of which was a fountain. Beyond this stood a palace, more magnificent than any she had seen. Going inside, Psyche was awed by the marvels she saw. Gold pillars, painted frescoes depicting hunting scenes and the revels of nymphs and shepherds. Chamber after chamber opened out, filled with all manner of wonderful things. Elegant couches, mosaic floors, a pool of clear water beneath a glass ceiling. Another breeze blew past her shoulder and whispered in her ear, We who walk invisible are at your service. We shall bathe you, dress you, wait on you at table. Whatever you wish to eat and drink will be brought to you. You are the mistress of this house. Psyche was baffled. Where was the monster? Where were the horrors she had been told to expect? Here, all was beauty. The breezes bathed her in the crystal pool. They led her to a table where they conjured food and wine from the air. Psyche was served from golden plates and from silver ewers. While she ate, the music of harp and lute played for her, and voices sang in high, clear harmony. After this, she was led to a bed of swan's down where she fell asleep. But during the small hours she awoke, there was a sound of footsteps. A shadow had entered the room. She felt the creak of the bed as someone lay down beside her. Psyche clutched the sheepskin coverlet about her and pulled her knees to her chin, her heart hammering. But the monster only sighed and lay still. Soon his slow breathing told Psyche he was asleep. When morning light came, Psyche steeled herself to turn and take a first look at her husband. But he was gone. Only the indent in the feather bed showed he'd been there at all. I was lucky to escape, she told herself, but perhaps he will devour me tonight. This thought was worse than if she'd faced danger head on. In vain her invisible servants provided her with pastimes for the day. Musical instruments, soft wools to weave, scrolls of poetry and philosophy. All she could think of was the coming night. When darkness fell, the monster came again. Again he lay beside her on the bed. Again she waited to be devoured. Again nothing happened. By the third night she felt she must speak. What are you? She said. Show yourself to me. If you mean to devour me, do it now. To her surprise, the voice that answered was not monstrous, but golden. A voice from the Garden of the Hesperides. Psyche, beloved Psyche, do not fear me. I do not wish to devour you. All I wish for is your love. But you may not see my face, That is forbidden, for I am a god, and you are immortal. Is your face so terrible then? Psyche said. You may find it terrible, you may find it beautiful, the god said. I would rather you love me for what I am. These words reminded Psyche of those she'd spoken to her parents. From that time she felt easier about her life in the palace, and began to look forward to her husband's nightly visits. As each night passed, their talk became more tender. Sometimes their fingertips would touch, or Psyche would feel warm breath and a feather-like kiss on her cheek. What need was there for more? What she had was perfection. Yet, a delicate bubble needs only a touch of rain to burst. One day Psyche thought of her family, who supposed her devoured by a monster. Her parents had never understood her, but what of her two sisters? It was unfair to keep them in ignorance. Please may they come here just for a day, she asked her husband that night. It would quiet their minds to know I am safe. Reluctantly the god agreed, and the next day the winds blew Psyche's sisters over the mountain and into the enchanted valley. Psyche ran to meet them. Sister! They hurried to embrace her. We thought you were dead. We thought the monster had devoured you, but what is this place? Psyche showed them around her home with joy, and they marvelled at the splendours of the palace. What of your husband? They asked. What is he like? Is he as hideous as everyone says? No, he's not a monster at all, said Psyche. He's lovely. But her sisters persisted until Psyche was forced to confess that she had never seen him, as he had always come at night, and she was forbidden to look on his face. Then how do you know? They said. Oh, Psyche, what sort of a husband hides his face? You must listen to us. We have been married longer than you and know what's what. This so-called god is lulling you into a false sense of security, only to devour you when you least expect it. Psyche protested, yet she remembered the shape of her husband's shadow in the dark. Huge, hunched shoulders of monstrous proportions. And had she not reached for him in the night and felt... what? Feathers? Fur? Take an oil lamp and a knife, her sisters said. Then when he is asleep, light the lamp and see for yourself what he is. If he is a monster, cut off his head. Even after the winds had blown her sisters home again, their words echoed in Psyche's mind. She took a lamp and a knife and waited till her husband slept. Then she uncovered the lamp and lifted it to behold her husband's face. He was breathtaking. No words in the mortal tongue could describe his beauty. Lamplight fell on a blushing cheek, ivory skin, golden ringlets. His chest was bare, the bones at his throat like two half-moons, and at his shoulders, two shining wings, like the wings of swans. He was her perfect counterpart, the masculine to her feminine, and yet so androgynous, they could have been twins. Psyche leaned nearer. As she did so, a drop of lamp oil fell on the sleeping god's shoulder. He awoke with a cry, spread his wings, and flew out the window. The moment he did, the palace melted away to nothing, until Psyche was sitting in an empty valley of trees and grass. The god fluttered in midair and looked down. Psyche, Psyche, why did you not trust me? I am Cupid, the son of Venus. My mother wanted me to punish you, but I fell in love with you. Now you have broken the prohibition. I must leave you forever. And he flew away into the starry sky, leaving Psyche forlorn and weeping. Why did I do such a thing? She asked herself. What we had was perfect. Why did I feel the need to follow my sister's counsel? There was no need for me to be like other brides. I had a god for a husband.
and now I've lost him. She lay on the ground expecting to die, but dying of a broken heart is much harder than people expect. In time, Psyche got up and began to climb up the other side of the valley, in a direction she had never gone before. In time, she came to a temple of Venus. Knowing how the goddess hated her, Psyche trembled with fear. But she laid an offering on the altar, daring Venus to appear, steeling her will to confront her mother-in-law. Venus appeared, her eyes flashing copper, her hair foaming like the sea. "So you dare to summon me, mortal? Do you think with one paltry offering you can make up for all the worship you stole from me? Or perhaps you are seeking your sick husband, laid up with the wound you so cruelly gave him?" She tossed her head. "It was a mistake, all a mistake," Psyche pleaded. "Please, let me see my husband again. I will do anything." "Anything?" A cruel smile came to the mouth of Venus. "In that case," and she led Psyche into a storehouse of grain kept to feed the sacrificial pigeons. "Separate all these grains, one from the other, sorting out barley, millet, lentils, vetch, each in their own place. Do it before sundown, and you may see my son again." When Venus left, Psyche sat in despair once more. Who could perform such an impossible task? Then she felt the breeze on her cheek, and a golden voice in her ear saying, "Look to the ants." She looked towards her feet and saw an army of ants marching in orderly lines. Carrying the grains high above their heads, they separated the crops into their respective piles. The task was finished well before sundown. When Venus returned, she was furious. "No mortal could do this. My faithless son has helped you. You must perform another task." At dawn, Venus took Psyche to a river bank. The river swelled with fearful rapids, and beyond it was a meadow full of golden rams. "These are the rams of Ares. They are so fierce they will trample anyone to death who enters the field. You must bring me a sample of wool from the fleece of each ram." When Venus had gone, Psyche stood on the river bank, trembling with fear and summoning the courage to brave its torrential waters. Then she felt the breeze on her cheek and a golden voice in her ear saying, "Listen to the river god." Psyche bent down. The hissing of reeds became a whispering voice. "Wait until the noontide sun has driven the rams into the shade, and the naiads have sung my waters to calmness. Then you may cross in safety and glean the wool that has caught on the thorny hedges." Psyche followed the river god's advice and returned with the golden wool. When Venus returned and saw what Psyche had done, she was furious. "No mortal could do this. My faithless son has helped you again. But I will give you a task so deadly, I defy any mortal to complete it." And so saying, she gave to Psyche a box. "Take this box and go to the realm of the dead. Ask Proserpina, queen of the underworld, for a sample of her beauty. Bring it to me here in this box before nightfall. I must adorn myself with it for the feast of the gods." This time Psyche was stunned. Go to the realm of the dead? So Venus meant to kill me all along and was only putting off the moment. She sighed. "And now it seems I must die by my own hand. Is that not what I wished, ever since Cupid flew from me?" She climbed to the top of a high tower, meaning to throw herself into the rocks below. But then she felt the breeze on her cheek and a golden voice in her ear saying, "Sweet Psyche, don't do it. There is a way into the underworld without dying." The voice explained how she might enter through a certain cave, pass by Cerberus, the three-headed dog, and pay the ferryman Charon to take her over the river Styx. "But do not eat the food of the underworld. and do not look in the box, whatever you do, said the voice. To look upon the beauty of Proserpina is certain death. Psyche did as she was bid. She entered the cave, passed Cerberus, and crossed the Styx to stand before Pluto and Proserpina on their thrones. Proserpina graciously agreed to place a sample of her beauty into the box, and Psyche returned the way she had come, back to the land of the living. But Venus did not come immediately, and the longer she waited, the more Psyche was tempted to look inside the box and see the beauty of Proserpina. "I will take just one peep," she said. One peep was all it took. She fell to the ground as one dead. This deathly sacrifice to Venus released Cupid from his mother's prohibition. He flew like an arrow to Psyche's side. He found her not dead, but only in a death-like sleep. "Oh, Psyche, now we have both suffered, but we will not be parted again." He touched her lightly with one of his golden arrows and placed a tender kiss on Psyche's lips. She awoke from her sleep, and there was Cupid sitting by her side, more beautiful than ever. "Beloved," she said, "forgive my folly. We are not as other couples and have no need to be. I see that now." "Hush, darling," Cupid whispered. He enfolded her in his wings, and together they flew to the palace of Jupiter. There they drank a cup of divine ambrosia in the presence of the gods. Thus was their marriage sealed, and thus was Psyche made a goddess, and the wife of Cupid for eternity. Put down the Grecian urn, for the tale is told, and yet the image remains. Two young lovers, eternally fresh and innocent, the mirror image of one another. Forever will she love, and he be fair. Thank you for listening to Asexual Fairy Tales. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider subscribing to the podcast. If you really enjoyed it and want to buy me a coffee, you can do that at ko-fi.com/ElizabethHopkinson48513. Don't forget you can follow me on Twitter at @hidden_grove. Or go to my website, elizabethhopkinson.uk, where you'll find links to all my books. All the links are in the episode description. I really appreciate all your support. Stay safe and keep reading.